Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're getting into pacifism. It's often misunderstood, you know, its roots go way back, but the actual term pacifism, that's pretty modern.
Yeah, surprisingly so. It was coined by a French campaigner, Emile Arnaud, back in 1901.
Right, 1901.
Hmm.
And that seems to mark a shift, doesn't it? From just general peace ideas to something more like a rational project, maybe even policy.
Exactly. And what's really fascinating is how this idea has kept changing, kept evolving. I mean, think about this. By 2011, global military spending hit over $1.7 trillion a year.
Wow, $1.7 trillion. That's hard to even picture.
It is. And that amount of money could fix so many basic problems, meet so many unmet needs around the world. So this deep dive is asking, in a world with this kind of destructive power, what alternatives does pacifism actually offer? Are there real options there?
Okay, so let's unpack that evolution you mentioned.
Yeah.
Because the early 20th century, before World War I, had this sort of optimism about peace, right?
It did, but World War I just shattered that utterly.
But paradoxically, you're saying the war actually forged a stronger, maybe more radical kind of pacifism.
That's right. And this is where it gets really intense. We see the rise of conscientious objection, people refusing to fight based on their conscience, their morals, their religion.
And that wasn't easy. In Great Britain, something like 16,000 men refused conscription.
16,000, yeah. And they faced brutal treatment. I mean, 73 of them died, either in prison or just after getting out.
That's horrific. But you're saying that suffering tragically almost created a kind of martyrology that actually strengthened the movement.
It seems so, ironically. It highlighted the depth of conviction, but it also immediately raises the question, you know, what's the practical impact? Does it do anything beyond personal witness?
Especially when faced with something like World War II. That must have been the ultimate test.
Absolutely. It led some really prominent people, think Albert Einstein, for instance, to actually abandon their pacifist stance. They felt they couldn't stick with it then.
Understandable, I suppose.
Yet, even then, in the U.S. alone, you still had 43,000 men register as conscientious objectors. 43,000.
Still a huge number. And something new came out of that, didn't it? The CPS program?
Yes, the Civilian Public Service. A really crucial innovation. About 12,000 of those objectors did what was called work of national importance.
And what kind of work was that?
Well, significantly, many worked in state mental hospitals. And the conditions they found were just appalling.
So they exposed this.
They did. Their reports, their testimonies, were instrumental in driving major reforms in mental health care after the war. It showed pacifism could be, well, constructive, actively useful.
So it's not just about refusal, it's about positive action too, which brings us back to that core question, effectiveness. Beyond individual acts or specific reforms, can it work on a bigger scale? Strategically.
Well, this is where some really interesting data comes in. Political scientists Erica Chenoweth and Maria Stephan did this huge study.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of this. What did they look at?
They analyzed over 300 political resistance campaigns between 1900 and 2006, both violent and nonviolent ones.
And the results?
Pretty stunning, actually. They found nonviolent campaigns were successful 53% of the time.
53%. Okay, how does that compare?
It's more than double the success rate for violent insurgencies, which was only 26%.
Wow. More than double.
Yeah. That kind of data really changed the conversation. It gave empirical weight to what people saw in movements led by, say, Gandhi in India or Martin Luther King Jr. in the U.S. civil rights movement.
So how does it work? Why is nonviolence apparently more effective, according to that data?
Well, the thinking is nonviolent action can mobilize much larger, more diverse groups of people. You don't need to be young and fit to march, right? And it can also cause loyalty shifts among opponents, like police or soldiers who might be less willing to crack down on unarmed civilians.
That makes sense. Broader support, potential for fracturing the opposition. But okay, let's tackle the really hard question. What about situations like, well, genocide, or facing groups that seem to have absolutely no conscience, the protection of innocence problem?
That is the toughest critique, no doubt. It points to the potential limits. Critics, and you know, even someone like President Obama has made this point, argue that nonviolence alone couldn't have stopped Hitler.
Right, or you know, convinced a group like Al-Qaeda to just lay down their arms.
Exactly. It's a powerful argument. But if we look at the bigger picture today, contemporary pacifism is it's adapting again. It's dynamic.
Oh, so?
It's broadening its focus, moving beyond just wars and battlefields to look at systemic threats, like climate change, for instance, framing action on climate change as a security issue and therefore as a form of, you know, peace work.
Interesting, connecting environmental security and peace.
Definitely. And you also see the power of citizen-led nonviolent action in international politics. Think about ICAN, the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons.
They won the Nobel Peace Prize.
Dumi did in 2017. For their work pushing for the treaty on the prohibition of nuclear weapons, it shows that organized nonviolent movements can still shape global policy, even on huge security issues.
Okay, so let's try and wrap this up for you listening. Mm-hmm. What we're seeing is that pacifism isn't some static, maybe naive, unchanging idea. It's really a living tradition. It keeps evolving its strategies, expanding its scope.
Right. So the question I think for you to consider is this. We live in an age with just unprecedented destructive power, but also amazing potential for cooperation. Can our societies, can we actually break free from these ancient cycles of violence?
Are nonviolent methods a truly effective way to get justice, to defend ourselves against aggression? Or are they still perhaps a kind of luxury we can't always afford?
Yeah, there are no easy answers there. But this deep dive into pacifism, looking at its history, its data, its ongoing evolution, it definitely offers some essential tools and perspectives for anyone who's serious about building a, well, a more just and peaceful future, something to think about.